imagine that right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole?
You could say that.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Matrix.
Do you want to know what it is? The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
Good day, everyone. I'm Pete Hendrickson, and I'm going to try and do a little unimprisoning here today. We're gonna have a session. We're going to talk about a number of interesting topics, and in the second hour of the program today, I'm going to open the phone lines and take your questions and comments. And so I would like everyone to take note of the number to do those call-ins. It's 844-769-2944. Hopefully we'll have talked about something that will pique your interest. I'm sure everyone recognized the segment there that we began with, a little portion from the movie The Matrix, in which Morpheus, one of the lead characters, is revealing to the protagonist, Neo, just what kind of a circumstance Neo has lived in his entire life. And we have a Matrix of our own. And, you know, one of the things about that film, it was just an absolutely spectacular movie. I strongly encourage anyone who hasn't seen it to do so. It's a great metaphor for a world in which narrative control is a feature of our intellectual environment, and that definitely is the case here in America. The matrix we live in is one in which we are endlessly and almost hypnotically told what to believe by a media and a government cabal. It's working together in an effort to create a functional reality which benefits those in power, and which suppresses questions which threaten that control. Now, I want to propose a couple of the narrative illusions currently plaguing America and share some thoughts about them. One that's especially suspect right now is being built around us with the ubiquitous and especially annoying, to me anyway, drumbeat that the vaccine is safe and effective. And, of course, This is a phrase, this repeated mantra that's used to try and get people who have not done so to take a dose or two doses of an experimental drug that only was formulated within the course of a year ago, less than a year ago in some cases, or to some extent. Has never had extensive testing. Obviously, if it was only created a year ago, it can only have been tested for a year, and that's not very long when you're talking about something that could potentially affect people for the rest of their lives. But we're being encouraged, even near compelled, to accept injections of this experimental drug. We're the ones who are being experimented upon, and we're being told to participate and basically shut up and don't ask questions, just take the jab. Now, this safe and effective thing is a declaration made over and over again, not only by public health experts, who might be imagined to have such recitals as validly within their lane, but also by supposed journalists, who, first of all, have no idea whether the vaccine is safe and effective, and secondly, shouldn't care. They have no valid professional interest in whether or not people take a vaccine or whether the vaccine works or doesn't work inherently, other than to report it as a matter of news. That's their only valid interest, is in telling us what's going on objectively and in regard to government actions and pronouncements skeptically. That's the role the media is supposed to play in our political institutions and in our political structure. And yet those quote-unquote journalists are full-throated members of the vaccine booster club. They prostitute their alleged professional independence on behalf of this policy objective. As such, they are the same voices, along with relevant government officials in every case, who similarly chanted and drowned out alternative voices with things like, in the past, there is no evidence of fraud in last November's election. Didn't we hear that one endlessly repeated, and in fact continue to hear that one endlessly repeated, despite no one actually having done any meaningful investigations, no one in the journalist community at least, to discover whether this is true or not? How about you can keep your doctor? We heard that one pretty endlessly when Obamacare was being pushed. Or there's the storyline that 19 Arabs with box cutters defeated the U.S. security state and made three steel-framed skyscrapers collapse into their own footprints. First time in history for that one. What about the North Vietnamese attacking the USS Maddox in the Gulf of Tonkin? That was one that got boosted all get out and ended up enmeshing us or admiring us in the Vietnam War for many years into the future at that time, and with 58,000 American deaths and millions of Vietnamese deaths. How about this one? Oswald shot Kennedy and Connolly by himself from behind with a magic bullet. Here's another one. The attack on Pearl Harbor was a surprise to the Roosevelt administration, and the Lusitania was not carrying munitions to Britain when torpedoed during the First World War, right? And then the one that's pervasive at all times today and for the last 80 years or so, income means what comes in American tax law. And on and on. Every one of those things is and was untrue, but all were relentlessly drummed into Americans' heads in support of narrative control, in support of the Matrix, and the furtherance of policies and practices which have been bad for the American people and which could not have been accomplished without those lies. It is these lies that prevent important questions from being asked about the official line, which might lead people to choose a different path and one that might not benefit those in power. I want to propose an example of such a challenging and threatening question in regard to the safe and effective vaccine notion. And that is this: even if safe and effective, neither of which is actually known of a treatment still early in its experimental stage, as I mentioned earlier, even if safe and effective, though, is the vaccine necessary? Remember, the threat against which the vaccine is deployed is virtually zero for healthy people of any age younger than the frail elderly. As has been shown by the huge number of asymptomatic cases, the vast majority of people who encounter the virus defeat it immediately and become completely immune to not only the current virus, but variants of the virus as well. This benefit is not even suggested by the vaccine mongers in regard to their product, by the way, from which I learned last night that some $50 billion has gone into a handful of pockets of 12 people or so by way of the Moderna vaccine alone. I want that point to be remembered. There is a very powerful financial benefit being had by a small group of people to the vaccine being taken by millions and millions of Americans. And at the same time, as I just pointed out, the benefit of taking that vaccine on, you know, for each of those Americans is slim to none. Put this in perspective a little bit, as far as those numbers are concerned. Someone recently sent me a couple of graphics that are illustrative of the of the situation. They compare, in to begin with, the Spanish flu of 1918 with the global COVID-19 pandemic. As of these numbers for that one are as of February 14th of 2021, so a couple of months ago. In the case of the Spanish flu, the world population at the time was about 1.5 billion people. Global cases of the flu were 500 million, that is to say 33.3% of the total population of the world. Global deaths, 50 million, 3.33% of the world population. COVID-19, this is just taking the numbers as they are delivered to us by officials who want us to be in a panic about this quote-unquote pandemic. World population, 7,845,948,309. Global cases of the COVID-19, again, official numbers, this presumes that all the PCR tests that were primarily run at higher than valid cycle figures are correct, but taking those at face value, 108,732,993 global cases. Global deaths, again, taking their numbers, 2,397,495 for a percentage of 0.031%. That's as compared to 3.33% for the Spanish flu. Obviously, even taking this worst case scenario where we're just buying into all the official numbers, the COVID-19 pandemic event pales in comparison to a real serious pandemic like the Spanish flu. But let's fix those numbers a little bit too, because the fact of the matter is the global deaths figures as well as the global case rate figures have been fudged. And I want to share with you some evidence of that. This is or an indicator of that. This is a statement from the CDC about the COVID-19 infection fatality rate figures and how they are arrived at. The CDC acknowledges that only 6% of the deaths that they attribute to COVID-19 in the official numbers, and in this case, we're just talking about the U.S. Figures and calculations, but this is extended worldwide. We are aware that the U.S. practices were copied throughout the Western world, at least. Only 6% of those deaths actually had COVID-19 as the direct cause of death. All the rest, 94%, the other 94%, had conditions or causes in addition to COVID-19, on average 2.6 additional conditions or causes per death. That is comorbidities. These are conditions which are themselves fatal. And so we're talking about people who frankly died of heart disease while happening to have COVID-19 purportedly discoverable in their systems. So only 6% of those deaths actually count. And what that does to the numbers that we were just looking at changes them in this fashion. World population still 7.8 billion. Global cases, I'll continue to use their number of 108 million. Global deaths, however, now go down to 143,850, which is a fatality rate of 0.0018. Again, as compared to 3.33% from the Spanish flu. This is, as a disease, COVID-19 has proven to be insignificant. Doesn't mean that it isn't a tragedy in any given case, in which it's a factor, or actually even the cause of death. But this is not the raging pandemic on the basis of which the Western world should have been shut down, people subjected to tyrannical diktats from wannabe despots in state houses and in Washington and in other countries as well, the UK, Australia, Canada, many other places had had lockdowns as severe, or in some cases even more severe than what happened here in the U.S. This was a spin. This is a Matrix event. This is a narrative event. The numbers, the basis of this knowledge was clear before any of those lockdown events took place. In fact, the COVID-19 first appeared on the scene in November of 2019, possibly even earlier, possibly even October. There's some reason to believe that, but November for sure. And the lockdowns didn't start until March 17th. That's a long time in between for a disease that is that we're told is about as contagious as anything ever has been, that has a long open time, that persists on surfaces, that was basically the revival of the Black Plague or the Spanish flu or worse, as we were told. We were told to expect 2.2 million deaths in the U.S. alone from this pathogen. And it spread completely unconstrained here and everywhere else for months, 3.5 months or more. And yet the total death toll in the U.S. ascribed to COVID-19 during that initial 3.5 or 4 months of unrestrained spread throughout the country, in which, you know, millions of people flew into this country from China, and every place the people from China had been during that entire time, the total number of deaths, 111 people. Obviously, this was not leading to 2.2 million deaths or even any substantial number at all. And yet, beginning in mid-March, California locked everybody in house arrest, and Michigan followed suit, and New York and other places, and the economy tanked, and we had institutional instability. And the whole thing was milked and kept alive primarily by Democratic political officials, not entirely, but primarily, and ultimately, you know, led to massive mail-in ballots deployed in the 2020 election, and so on and so forth. I'm not going to connect every dot. I think that everyone's capable of doing that themselves. So this is the Matrix. This is this was the illusion. The illusion was we had this horrendous killer disease descending upon us, and everything had to change. Everything had to be different. Everyone had to subordinate themselves to this new public health authority that was brought forward. And yet it was all or mostly an illusion. So, again, the question, is the vaccine even necessary? Safe and effective? Maybe. Maybe not. Again, don't know that. We don't know that at all, and we won't know that for a few years. What we do know is that it isn't necessary. It certainly is not necessary in young people who basically never catch this disease or suffer any meaningful effects from it. Their immune systems are easily capable of slapping this thing down, and they do, and they have done. That's what we have seen. That's what the science tells us. The science tells us young people simply do not exhibit infections from this disease. There are a few that have comorbidities, there are some kids that are sick, so sick that anything, any kind of additional stress on their systems will be harmful. But a normal, healthy kid of any age up to certainly up to the age of majority, up to 18, nothing whatsoever will happen. And yet, right now, we're having this hoot and holler about the Moderna vaccine being approved now for administration to people, kids from 6 to 17 or something along that line. I can't think of the exact number, but something along that line. Why on earth would anyone subject their kids to the injection of a chemical, a biological agent, actually a genetic agent, against the vanishingly remote possibility that they will catch and suffer any kind of meaningful consequence, even just to the point of being noticeably sick from this disease, when that actually simply does not happen. It just doesn't happen. Arguably, to inject kids of that age in particular is an unnecessary medical procedure and unethical on its face. Same thing is true of injecting anyone who has been sick with COVID-19. Those people have immunity. They have a complete immunity. They have, in fact, a better immunity than these what are called vaccines will provide, because these, for several reasons. One, these vaccines are not actually vaccines. They're genetic instructions that are focused on one particular feature of the existing COVID-19 virus, the spike protein, and leave everything else from that virus, all the other features of that virus, unaddressed by the immune system. So the mRNA vaccine will instruct the recipient's body to create defenses against just that spike protein, but not against any other characteristic of the virus. So if the virus mutates to the point where that spike protein is not as recognizable as it had been, your system will be absolutely unequipped to do anything whatsoever about it. And that makes variants potentially dangerous. Whereas a natural immunity is a protection against all variants, all forms, all features of the virus. I hear the music coming up, so we're going to go to a break, and we will continue this talk on the other side.
This is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregarasp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
If you eat your Manna food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Okay, we're back. I want to take this opportunity to remind everybody one more time about the Power Mall. It's a lot of great products there, and I strongly encourage everyone to check them out. Go to thepowermall.com, which is open 24/7, of course, or you can call 877-817-9829 to get a hold of the folks there Monday through Friday, 8 to 4 Central Time. So we were talking about the Matrix. We were talking about the narrative control that constitutes what we live in, that is the analog to the Matrix. And I want to carry on with one last item relating to the vaccine point that I focused on in the first segment there. And that is the question of the development of the COVID-19 pathogen in the first place. A lot of you are probably aware that there is a little bit of fuss going on that subject right now, because as it turns out, a lot of evidence has emerged that Anthony Fauci, the guy who probably more than anyone else was responsible for the chaos, the confusion, the distractions that were emanating out of Washington and repeated from state houses across the country constantly throughout the course of the last 18 months or so, I don't know, 14, 15 months, since last March, basically. You know, wear masks, don't wear masks, socially distance, don't, 6 feet, 3 feet, schools can be open, schools can be closed. Or must be closed. The fatality rate figures, the percentages, the just a constant daily deluge of often contradictory stuff. Everything that was just seemed like it was designed to keep you off balance. Didn't it seem that way? It did to me. It seemed like a classic case of a destabilization program. And we discover now that Anthony Fauci, or at least have good reason to now conclude that Anthony Fauci actually had very much a hand in the creation of the COVID-19 virus. It appears that his organization, National Allergy and Infectious Disease Institute, financed what is called gain of function research on the virus that eventually became the COVID-19 virus, and did so by sending money through a cutout corporation to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, from which there is, again, good reason at this point to conclude the COVID-19 virus eventually emerged. Obviously, I think a guy who had some responsibility for the generation of this disease, which, while not being the dire plague reborn that it had been made out to be, for obvious political benefits to those who exploited it, it was nonetheless a disease that did contribute to a fair number of deaths. And for somebody who has had a hand in the development of such a thing, I think that the idea of keeping everybody off balance for the next year or so until this becomes kind of lost a little bit in the fog of time and competing interests or competing items for the public attention, it seems to me that's a legitimate possibility. I'm making no accusations here. As I said, there are things that appear to be the case, not definitive. Anthony Fauci seems to be dodging the issues. Rand Paul actually had him under oath in Congress at a hearing not long ago, in which he asked him specifically if Fauci or his institute had funded the gain of function research at the Wuhan Virology Institute, and Fauci denied it, and it was only shortly afterwards that it came out that depends on the meaning of he could be said to have been technically accurate in that his organization gave the money to the cutout, and the cutout gave the money to the Institute of Virology in Wuhan. So his organization didn't directly fund it. They did do it in another way. And unfortunately, Rand Paul apparently wasn't aware of that little idiosyncrasy of the process at the time that he was questioning Fauci, but it has come out since then. So my point about all that is, one, this may provide some explanation for the crazy quilt of edicts and directives and what have you that came out of the mouth of Mr. Simon Says, Anthony Fauci, and the various people who parroted him around the country. That's one take worth having, I think, to have that perspective. The other is now, as a consequence of all this, Rand Paul got an amendment passed to Senate Bill 1260, which is designed to establish a Directorate for Technology and Innovation in the National Science Foundation, and a few other things. Rand Paul's amendment would prohibit U.S. funds going to gain-of-function research in China. And I think that that's great, but at the same time, I want to encourage anyone that has any influence with Rand Paul or Congress in general to go a little further and take the seemingly obvious additional step of banning gain of function research in the U.S. Also, this it's crazy that anyone should feel free or even officially authorized to make pathogens more virulent and more dangerous, which is what gain of function is. The whole idea is crazy, and I frankly don't understand why Rand Paul wouldn't have automatically gone that way as well, unless there are forces that are interested in preserving the U.S.'s ability to create bioweapons, which is what that's all about. And I don't like that too much myself. I don't know about you, but I don't think that we need them for our protection. And I think that that's one of those, once that genie comes out of the bottle, it's a very, very bad thing for everybody. This is an indiscriminate sort of weapon, bioweapons. So that's all I've got to say about that. I want to remind everyone that the next hour we're going to open the phone lines, 844-769-2944. So if you have anything to say about that subject, please call in and share your comments on that point. So, okay, continuing with the narrative matrix concept and the idea behind it, which is to take control of the situation, take control of people's thinking, take control of the box in which people find their minds that dictates what questions can be asked, what perspectives can be viewed, and so forth. Another little tidbit, this is from recent news here in Michigan where I live. Consumers Energy, the one of two major energy providers, electricity providers in this state, is just announced having been given authorization by state regulators to raise electric rates by 50% during certain times throughout the summer months. The program is described as a clean energy policy intended to help prevent the necessity of building more dirty generating plants to cover the anticipated demand for electricity. And we'll presume that that anticipated demand would be from air conditioning, which, you know, that being the primary energy challenge when there is one in summertime. But the fact is, Michigan has actually lost population in recent years. In fact, Michigan's losing a congressional seat next time around as a consequence of its population loss. And in light of that, it's hard to see how demand can be expected to exceed, demand for electricity can be expected to exceed the already installed capacity, which had proven to be adequate in previous years. So I'm not really buying this argument that so-called clean energy policy is to prevent the necessity of building more generating plants. I think it's not really that kind of policy. I think that it's an effort to compel people in Michigan to use less electricity regardless of its availability as part of the same environmentalist enthusiasms that contributed to 21 fatalities in Texas this past February. You all remember the big Texas freeze-out in February when the state's foolish and to some degree mandated reliance on windmills and solar panels proved inadequate to provide electrical requirements for heating purposes in a deep freeze that was a little unexpected. It was a little more severe than normal, but it was not like the sort of thing that's never happened before. This was just a Green New Deal kind of oriented or mandated project of reliance in which Texas went to rely, went to provide for 30% of their electrical capacity. I think it was 30% of their electrical capacity being supplied entirely by these renewable energy sources, windmills and solar panels. And so they disabled or took offline their normal, more reliable capacity of fossil fuel-based production plants and switched over to switch that percentage of the capacity over to these what proved to be completely unreliable alternatives, which basically froze up in the conditions that that Texas was dealing with in February, this past February. As I said, 21 people died as a consequence. Many others suffered, and it was a very harrowing situation for a week in Texas in February. I think that the Consumers Energy switchover is basically the same sort of thing. It's an effort to embrace and participate in or cooperate with a political impulse towards reducing fossil fuel consumption and the gaseous output from that fossil fuel consumption. So Here's the thought that comes into my mind, and this is where it relates particularly to the Matrix narrative concept. To my mind, that unlikely consumer's energy argument about capacity protection prompts this thought, which will seem radical because of the narrative control, because of the Matrix in which we've all been immersed for decades, and by which some things have been implanted in our minds as articles of faith. Here is that radical thought. The state of Michigan, and indeed the United States overall, has no responsibility to manage climate change, even if human activity really is contributing to whatever the always vaguely defined thing known as climate change might be, which is something that, to be honest, is not yet known. There's a lot of modeling that goes on, computer modeling that goes on that purports to support the argument that the climate change or and more particularly, if you pin people down more directly, it usually relates to the concept of global warming, that it is human caused. But it's just computer models. Those are the same models that predicted 2.2 million COVID-19 deaths in the United States last year, by the way. Those were also computer model projections done by Neil Ferguson at Imperial College in London. And computer models are simply... You know, it's a garbage in, garbage in, or garbage out kind of scenario. They're only as good as the data and the forethought that goes into them. Someone being fast and loose with their thinking or not getting sufficiently in depth, not achieving a sufficient level of complexity in the model that they create of what are necessarily very complex natural phenomena, will end up with results that are virtually meaningless. They can be models can be designed to support a theory and to result in an outcome, a desired outcome. If you want to create a model that will tell you that you have to shut down the productive economy and switch everything over to renewable energy, you can do that. You can create a computer model that will give you that result. That doesn't mean that it's an accurate model. And time and time again, we have seen that sort of modeling done and discovered after enough time has passed that it was bogus. It was not necessarily deliberate bogus, but it was insufficient. It was inaccurate. And so, again... come to the question, in part because we can't actually know these things, and also in part because even if we are able to know them, we have to balance costs at all times, and the cost of allowing a central government to take control of our economy or to direct all of our activities towards the service of a certain agenda, be it, you know, to reduce or protect against climate change or whatever, or to protect everyone against the COVID-19 plague. That's a big cost involved in allowing that to happen. And so we have to measure those costs against the imagined cost of not doing anything collective about a problem such as climate change, for instance. And we also have to measure it against the nature of government that we care to tolerate, that we care to live under. And in our system, we are opposed constitutionally. We are opposed structurally, and constitutionally in both senses. Our internal constitutions are liberty oriented, and our actual constitutions in this country are liberty oriented and state restraint oriented as well. But you know, it's and because of that, we have to keep in mind that neither Michigan nor the United States have the delegated authority to command you and me to act in some way or another on behalf of the climate change beliefs which some folks might harbor, or to which they may pay lip service, or the climate change agenda by which some intend to profit at the expense of the rest of us. And you know certainly that this is an issue. Any large-scale government initiative of whatever kind involves benefits for some folks that are private benefits, and not just the benefits of, you know, everyone being protected from COVID-19, you know, the gold star that one might wear for having accomplished that, should that be the case, but profits in the sense of what those vaccine investors, you know, those people who invested in the Moderna vaccine, those dozen or so people that said yesterday to have accumulated about $50 billion over the course of the last year, that kind of benefit. So Michigan and the United States don't have the delegated authority to do this, but the practical course of the political structure is designed to kind of create the impression that this is otherwise, or that we have to sacrifice that lack of delegated authority and simply disregard it for some kind of greater good or you know, even a greater personal good. As H.L. Mencken observed early in the last century, he said, "The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary." And that's a fact. The politics moves forward by collective action. And the politics, you know, the state, the apparatus of the state is the country operating as a collective. Everybody kicks in their whatever, and it is taken into central hands, and the central hands devise policies and spend the money, and that's the concept. So the narrative is designed to accomplish that. The reason that there is a narrative, the reason that people are encouraged to view things and understand things in a certain way, is in order to habituate them or quell their concerns about the collectivism that the state requires in order to accrue power and wealth into the hands of those who operate the state and the clients and cronies of those people. So even though our American exceptionalism actually lies in our restraint of the state and that those tendencies of accruing power, the constant assertion of crises, that practical politics that H.L. Mencken referred to, the series of hobgoblins, all call for collective responses in order to validate or justify the transfer of power and wealth to those private hands. I'll share one other thing from Mencken right now. We're coming up on another break here, and I don't want to get caught halfway through with something else that I wanted to share, which I will start the next hour with, and then we'll go to the questions and comments if anyone cares to call in. But here was Mencken's the other Mencken point that I wanted to share, and this is a note about the perspective that will do the questioning of the narrative that I've been referring to. Mencken said, "The most dangerous man to any government is the man who is able to think things out for himself, without regard to the prevailing superstitions and taboos. Almost invariably, he comes to the conclusion that the government he lives under is dishonest, insane, and intolerable. And so, if he is romantic, he tries to change it. And if he is not romantic personally, he is nonetheless apt to spread discontent among those who are." And this is the call to action, effectively, speaks to every individual. We have to be the ones, you have to be the ones, to take the Matrix, you know, take Morpheus's red pill and wake up from that Matrix narrative and think for ourselves and raise the questions and raise the challenges and be a gadfly, be an awakening alarm bell for other people, be a voice that won't be silenced and won't be cowed, and will raise those challenges. We'll be Rand Paul, for instance, in his questioning of Fauci, but go further still, and as in the case of the gain of function thing, insist that gain of function of biological weapons stop everywhere, including the United States, not be taken in by the prospect that we can do it. We shouldn't be subjected to the restraints that we want to impose on anyone else, or be beneficiaries of grants that we want to deny to anyone else, because we're so great. We are great, but we're great because we impose those restraints on our state, and because our system is designed to be made up of and populated with those dangerous men that Mencken was speaking of, the people who are able to think for themselves and not fall prey to prevailing superstitions and taboos. And here comes the music. We're about to go to the hour break. On the other side, a little more talk, and then we'll take your calls. And see you then.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? ThePowerMall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at ThePowerMall.com today.